Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Rockcast. I am your host, Monty Colvin.
The guy that I call a weasel.
I am back with another podcast, even though there's a good chance that nobody's listening.
That's true.
I really have no idea how many people listen to this show, but if I were to venture a guess, I would say it's in the thousands.
You're living a delusion.
Regardless what the number is, I continue to get emails, comments, and questions from you guys. And I'm going to read some of those today, starting with one from our old friend in Arizona, Ed Scythe.
That jerk from Tucson.
And in reference to all the heavy stuff I play on this show with the Cookie Monster vocals, Ed says, "Hey, Monty, you're not the only old guy who likes the heavy stuff. Cookie good.
Nothing is more brutal than..."
I also heard from Iris North, who said she also likes the Cookie Monster vocals. In fact, she even likes Goat Whore. She also said she liked the new Bumblefoot CD that Zoe reviewed and wondered what label he was on. And I looked around Iris and I checked his website and I couldn't find out anything. My guess is that he just puts it out himself and you can find it on his website, but that's all I could find out. But I'm glad you liked it, Iris, unlike most of the other people I heard from who didn't seem to like the new Bumblefoot at all. Nor did anyone like it that I played Hollywood Undead. I couldn't believe there wouldn't be at least a couple of people who would like those tasty melodies. But apparently most of you don't like the rap rock, and you just think I'm stupid for liking Hollywood Undead.
That's correct.
But that's okay, because I recall Anthrax liking Public Enemy, and Aerosmith liking Run-DMC. And that seemed to work out okay for those guys. But I get it, a lot of people don't like offensive language, and sometimes you just can't get into the lyrics. Myself, I'm kind of a melody guy, or just overall music guy. If it's got a cool groove, or a great hook, or a great riff, I don't care what the lyrics are. In fact, a lot of my favorite songs, I don't even know what they're saying. And I'll even give you one better. Back in the Galactic Cowboy days, I'd have this song written, and Ben would come in and do the lyrics. And we would go in and record it and go on tour and play it. And to this day, I don't know what the hell he was talking about. For example, on the Horse That Bud Bought album, we had a song called Bound. And he was talking about riding on an omnibus or something. And I'm like, okay. At one point I said, what's this song about, Ben? And he explained it to me. And I still have no clue. But anyway, it was a good song, even if I didn't understand the lyrics. But I know a lot of people are all about the lyrics, including my wife. Lindsay knows every single word to every Tool song ever. And apparently that stuff really speaks to her somehow, whereas I just listen to what they're doing musically and go, wow, how do they do that?
They're on drugs!
Of course, I think the people who are the most into lyrics are the religious people. And I know this because I grew up in a Christian family and I heard some of the worst music ever. I'm just being honest.
God should send you to hell.
No, seriously, most of it's all the same and just plagiarized right out of the Bible. And since it's taken out of the Bible, you can't criticize it, right?
Absolutely not.
And back when I went to church, something that I used to hear a lot was Christian people say, God gave me this song. And they'd be like, I can't take any credit for this. It's all the Lord. And I'd think, oh, really? Well, this should be interesting. And then they'd play it for me, and it would sound something like this. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, good God Almighty, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And after hearing that, I'm thinking, you know, maybe you should stop giving God the credit for that. Because if that was his gift to you, then he is a horrible songwriter.
This man is blaspheming.
But enough about bad songwriting, because on the last episode, I had the Battle of the Bands. And the winner was Brian Eckhard, who wrote a really good song called Ninjas at a Drive-Thru. And I still have not heard from Brian, so if you know Brian, tell him congratulations. Because I'm sure he'll be absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, I got a message on Facebook from a friend named Todd Parkinson. And he said, hey, Monty, that song Ninjas at a Drive-Thru reminded me of an old band named Extra Large. Have you ever heard of those guys? Well, believe it or not, Todd, yes, I have heard of that band Extra Large. In fact, I have that CD. And I got to see them live back in the early 90s. I think they were opening for somebody like Faith No More. And the things I remember about them is that the drummer was really good and the singer was hilarious. And one of the guys ended up being in Oingo Boingo, but that drummer, his name was Josh Freese. And he went on to do all kinds of studio projects, and he was in Paul Westerberg's band for a while, and he was also in A Perfect Circle. But yeah, Extra Large was a cool, quirky band, and they sounded like this. So that's Extra Large, but I also heard from my buddy on Facebook, Paul Morgan, and he told me that he was watching the new documentary about the band Kansas, Miracles Out of Nowhere. And yeah, I saw that too, Paul, and it was awesome. I've been a fan of Kansas since I was in high school, and this documentary reminded me of why I love them so much. You see, when I was about 17 or 18, I was just a basketball nerd. But the guys in my art class were into all these cool bands like Kansas and Blue Oyster Cult. And they'd bring the albums in and our teacher would let us listen to them. And that's where I got introduced to all this stuff. And after I graduated, I had a couple of high school friends say, hey, we're going up to see Kansas in Kansas City. You want to go? And I was like, yeah, sure. But I wasn't totally excited about it. But one of those guys said, hey, listen, if you don't love this concert, I will pay for your ticket. And so I said, all right. And I went in and proceeded to have my mind blown by Kansas. You know, I think back and I go, how cool were the guys in my high school? They weren't into Top 40 or waiting around for somebody to tell them what to listen to. They were into this cool prog stuff. And when you compare it with the dumbass kids today who buy One Direction albums, well, I really miss the 70s.
He's old!
Of course, today when you think of Prague, you think of Dream Theater or Porcupine Tree. But Kansas was doing it before any of those guys, including Rush. And they did it with such amazing vocals and melodies. So like I was saying, the first time I ever saw Kansas, they completely blew me away. And I'm sitting there watching Kerry Livgren play guitar, and he's leaning his head back, and he was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And that night, he became my hero for life. And when I got back from that show, I did a painting of Kerry Livgren, and I still have that today. But what I never dreamed is that one day I would meet Kerry Livgren and I would introduce myself and he would turn and look at me and say, "Hey, I love Galactic Cowboys."
I think you're making this up.
That was maybe one of the greatest moments in my life. Because when I realized my idol had heard my music, I was pretty much speechless. But it got even better when Kerry said, "Hey, would you want to sing on one of my albums?" And a few months later, I went to his studio, hung out with him, had dinner, and it was just an unforgettable experience.
I bet it was!
Flash forward a few years later, Kerry played a guitar solo on one of my songs. It's off the Crunchy Loserville CD. Check it out. That was on the song Rockstar Now off of my Loserville CD. And talk about a dream coming true. To have one of my heroes who inspired me to be a songwriter in the first place end up playing on one of my songs, incredible. And if I never had anything else happen in my career, that would have been enough. But anyway, the Kansas DVD is very cool. You'll love it if you're a Kansas fan like I am. Lots of interviews with the whole band. There's some old live footage that's really nice. And one of my favorite things was hearing Kerry talk about how he wrote all that stuff on Left Overture. And it just made me realize once again what a complete genius he is. So definitely check out the Kansas DVD, one of the greatest bands ever. And you know, if you let me pick anybody in the world and said, you can sing just like them, it would be Steve Walsh from Kansas. Just watch this documentary and then tell me this guy was not a vocal god.
Three,
Absolutely powerful. Like I said earlier, I miss the 70s, not because of the TV shows or because of the horrible fashion trends. I mean, you had the Love Boat and platform shoes and silk shirts and disco. All that was horrible, but when it came to rock and roll, it just seemed like people had more of an open mind. I went to a summer festival back around 78, and it had Kansas as the headliner, Steve Miller, Eddie Money, and the opening band was Van Halen. And they were all completely different kinds of bands, but nobody seemed to care. And I didn't really like Steve Miller at the time, and I still don't. But it's not like I stood there and yelled, "You suck," through his whole set, even though I probably should have.
Well, yeah.
But it wasn't just the fans that had an open mind. I think the record companies did too. Bands like Kansas put out 3 or 4 albums before they ever had a hit. And they had 9-minute songs, and they had big old guys that wore overalls. You didn't have to be 18 and look like a model. You could be downright kind of homely and still get signed. And a lot of the bands back then experimented and did all kinds of crazy crap. And one such person was Alice Cooper, who, by the way, also has a documentary out that I watched. It was called Super Duper Alice Cooper.
Isn't the name terrific?
And even though I've never been a huge Alice Cooper fan, I found this thing really interesting. In fact, in the beginning, it was a little bit creepy for me because he grew up in Phoenix and his dad was a pastor. And when he was young, he didn't drink or smoke. But that's kind of where the similarities end. As we all know, he went on to be hugely successful and became a raging alcoholic and a drug addict. I, on the other hand, never experienced any of that, and it's probably for the best. The more I see about rock stars, the more I think it must be really difficult to handle fame. And I think one reason is because everybody around them is going, "You're the man, you're the star." And after a while, they just think they're indestructible. And they kind of lose a grip on reality. And there's a part in the film where Alice says, "You know, there's a point where I stopped being myself and just became the character, Alice Cooper." And it's that way with so many celebrities today and even the professional athletes. I grew up idolizing guys who could play in the NBA, and now I can't stand them. By the time they get out of high school, they've already been pampered and told they can do no wrong. Even a guy like LeBron James, he didn't start out being so sickening. The first year he was in the league, he was fairly cool. But by year 2 or 3, he was talking about himself in the third person. And now he just makes me want to puke.
What's the point of this?
The point is, fame is kind of a dangerous thing. And for Alice Cooper, it took him all the way to the bottom and he had to climb his way back out. So good for him, and his documentary is not too bad. The original Alice Cooper band was actually really cool, and I learned some things that I didn't know, like Frank Zappa actually helped them get signed.
Everybody knows that.
Okay, getting back to some of your emails, comments, and questions. Dan the Man Cunningham wondered if I'd been watching the new installments of That Metal Show. And yes, I have, Dan. That's a show I watch almost every week. And they've had some cool guests on there, like recently they had Joey Vera and John Bush from Armored Saint. And of course, I toured with John Bush when he was with Anthrax, and I know Joey Vera because his wife worked at Metal Blade when I was on Metal Blade.
This is an enormous piece of information.
So it was cool to see them on TV again, and apparently they're putting out another Armored Saint album.
I didn't know that.
And I also found out John Bush has been doing a lot of voiceovers in commercials for Burger King.
This is another thing I didn't know.
But That Metal Show is a little bit hit and miss for me. I like some of the guest guitarists that come on there and play, like John 5 just blew me away. And I like Florentine and Jameson. I think they're pretty funny. But is it just me, or does Eddie Trunk take himself way too seriously? I know he's this expert on hard rock, but God, if he misses a question and Stump the Trunk, he's just like a total spaz. The other night he got one wrong, and he just kept guessing until he got it right, and then he didn't want to give the guy a prize. And they're like, no, Eddie, you didn't get it. And he just starts whining, no, come on, come on. And I thought, geez, is it really going to kill the show to give away a T-shirt or a King Diamond CD?
That's what I want.
But whatever, there are some other things I like about the show.
Name one thing.
For instance, there's a segment where they ask the guest questions like, if you could be in any other band, who would it be and what would you play? And a lot of them will say Zeppelin or Metallica. But if I was on there and they asked me, I'd say I'd play bass for the Wild Hearts. And Eddie Trunk would look at me and say, who?
What are you talking about?
Another question they asked their guests is, what is the first song you ever learned? To which I would say, Mary Had a Little Lamb or Cat Scratch Fever.
Okay.
I was a huge Ted Nugent fan when I started learning how to play guitar, and I think that was the first guitar solo I ever learned note for note. Wow, this show's starting to sound like an FM radio classic rock station.
And it's absolutely appalling.
I'm sorry.
You big creep.
Anyway, I bet you're ready for some top tens, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I dread these kinds of things.
Well, all right then. Let's start it out with a list sent in by Kevin Montigny, also known as Kevin from New York. And these are Kevin's top 10 favorite cover tunes. And it starts out at number 10 with NSYNC covering Saline by Christopher Cross.
What?
And Kevin says, rip on me if you want, but I really enjoy this cover.
Are you nuts?
Well, don't worry, Kevin. No one's going to rip on you. Because I actually liked Christopher Cross, and NSYNC did a pretty good job covering the song.
You could not be more wrong.
Number 9 is Fishbone with Everybody is a Star by Sly and the Family Stone. Number 8 is 24/7 Spies covering Along Came Mary by The Association. Number 7 is Prince doing One of Us by Joan Osborne. Number 6 is a great band, Saigon Kick, doing Space Oddity by David Bowie. And number 5 is a ginger from the Wild Hearts side project called Hey Hello, doing She's a Beauty by The Tubes. And, well, I like Hey Hello, I love Ginger, and I love The Tubes. So let's check that out. Hey Hello, doing She's a Beauty.
Step right up and don't be shy, because you will not believe your eyes.
Yeah, nice version. I love that part in the pre-chorus with the harmonies. It just gives me chills. She's everything you dream of. Returning to Kevin's list, at number 4, Follow For Now, doing She Watch Channel Zero by Public Enemy.
Yeah, boy!
Number 3 is Galactic Cowboys with I Want You by Kiss. And thanks, Kevin. We didn't do very many covers, but I'm glad you liked that one. But with every top 10 list I get that has Galactic Cowboys on it, one step ahead of GC will be King's X.
Don't!
Therefore, at number 2 is King's X with Take Cover by Mr. Big.
It is insulting.
Yeah, I was not even aware that King's X had done a cover of a Mr. Big song. But then again, I'm not familiar with the Mr. Big version. So let's just move on to Kevin's number 1 favorite cover, which is Joan Jett, Crimson and Clover, originally done by Tommy James and the Shondells. Yeah, Kevin, I love Joan Jett, and back in the 80s, I learned how to play the entire I Love Rock and Roll album. And to this day, I still wish I could be the bass player in her band.
Hell no, that's not going to happen.
Okay, well, I'm feeling good, so let's do another one. And this was sent in by Christian in Germany. And Christian says, "Hey, Monty, still love your music, art, and rock cast. You are great. Here is my list of top 10 concerts I attended before I had reached the age of 21. And it starts out at number 10 with Alice Cooper in 1990.
Who the hell is she?
Wow, you know, I've never seen Alice Cooper live. I wish I could have. I also have never seen number 9, Gary Moore. And I guess I never will.
That guy is dead.
Number 8 is Iron Maiden in 1995 on the X Factor Tour. And Christian says it was during the Blaze Bailey time period, and he didn't really care for that. But he had 2 backstage passes and stood on stage next to Steve Harris. Amazing.
I bet it was.
Yeah, that's funny, Christian, because I have a similar experience. Back then, I knew the tour manager for Iron Maiden, and when they came through Houston, back when Blaze Bailey was on vocals, they were playing a club, and he got me in, and I was backstage. And like you, I was standing over there by Steve Harris, and his roadie gave me one of Steve's wristbands that I still have today. And Nico was on drums, and he'd turn and look at me and make these crazy faces. And even though it was kind of sad that Bruce Dickinson wasn't with them, and it was kind of lame being in this small club, it was still incredible being that close to them and watching it. So, yeah, I get it. Iron Maiden is always amazing. But moving on to number 7, Christian saw Primus in 1995. Number 6 is Faith No More in 1995. And number 5 is the before-mentioned Bruce Dickinson, I guess on a solo tour, in 1990. Number 4 is Suicidal Tendencies in 92, when Christian was 17. He saw them in Cologne, Germany, with Rage Against the Machine as the opener. At number 3, when Christian was 13, he saw AC/DC in 1988. He says it was the Blow Up Your Video tour with Dokken as the support, and I'm assuming that was awesome. As was number 2, Alice in Chains in 1993 on the Dirt tour. Yeah, if you got to see Alice in Chains before Layne Staley died, that seems kind of awesome now. I actually caught them on their first album tour, opening for Extreme at a little club. And there wasn't that many people there, and whoever wasn't that into it, except me and Doug Penick. because we were really digging it, but Lane Staley looked like he was half asleep.
Right.
And he'd walk up to the mic in between songs and go, "This is our next song, and if you don't like it, I could really give a shit." But I did like it, and after their set, me and Doug went on their bus and hung out with them for a while. And as you might have guessed, they were huge King's X fans.
Shocking.
But there was Lane Staley sitting right next to me, and it's just weird to think that he's gone.
Get out! He died?
But at number one on Christian's list of concerts he saw before he was 21, the Monsters of Rock tour in 1988 when he was 13. Christian says that headlining the show was Iron Maiden on the Seventh Son of a Seventh Son tour. And the support acts were, get this, Kiss, David Lee Roth, Megadeth, and Anthrax. Yeah, that sounds like an awesome show, Christian. Good list. Time now for me to get old man on ya with a segment I like to call Get Off My Lawn. I've been around the block, I'm cranky, and even though I may not look like it, I'm probably older than all of you.
A completely miserable human being.
And I'm no longer afraid to admit it, it's just part of life. And the other day, I started realizing it when I went to play basketball for the first time in about 6 years. And holy crap, was I horrible. And it was so depressing because I used to play basketball in high school and for years after that, and I could knock down jumpers all over the court. But I go out there now, and not only can't I hit a three, I couldn't hit a layup or a free throw.
A pitiful thing indeed.
And I said to myself, how can I be so bad at something that I used to be so good at? But I am, and I may have to just stick to watching it from now on. In fact, my 8-year-old stepson is playing basketball now, and maybe I'll just have to live my life through him like most parents.
Give it up!
But it's hard to get most 8-year-olds focused. During the practice, when the coach is trying to talk to him, he's just looking off into space. And the first couple of games, he wouldn't even take a shot. He'd just stand there with the ball. And so we finally said, listen, for every shot you take, we'll give you a quarter, and if you make a shot, we'll go out for ice cream after the game. Well, sure enough, it worked, because the next game, he just was launching them from everywhere. And afterwards, we said, good game, buddy, and he said, yeah, you owe me $3.75, and I'd like about 3 toppings on that ice cream.
Cash.
But the boy is a good kid, and the other night he watched his first basketball game with me on TV. Up until then, he hadn't cared anything about it, but he suddenly decided he was going to watch the national championship game with me. And for some reason, he was rooting for Duke, and I wanted Wisconsin. Why Wisconsin? Well, they have white guys, and they had seniors. And I say that not to be racist, but just to point out the fact that the only guys who stay in school are the white guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And the talent in college basketball has become so diluted that now you can just take 3 or 4 freshmen and win the national championship. And then those guys, after 1 year of college, are all going to the NBA. And a handful of them will do really well at the next level, but most of them will either disappear or end up playing for somebody like Sioux Falls.
I'd rather die! Death is welcome!
So I wish they would make these guys stay in school a little longer, because it would be better for college sports, and it would be better for the NBA. Because when you've got a guy averaging 9 points as a freshman, and he thinks he's ready to go pro, something's wrong.
Get off my lawn!
Okay, enough about sports. How about something that's really important? Like the new season of Dancing with the Stars.
No!
Once again, they have scraped the bottom of the barrel to come up with somebody that you've possibly kind of heard of. For instance, how about Bruce Willis's daughter? Oh. You thought I was going to say Bruce Willis? Well, no. He's way too big of a celebrity for this show. And instead, you get people like Michael Sam, who is known mainly for being gay. He keeps trying to play in the NFL, but he keeps getting cut. But they keep reminding us how courageous he is, even though he may not be quite as courageous as one of the other contestants, who is a former soldier who has one arm and one leg. And I really do admire this guy because he defended our country and he's an awesome person. But seriously, he can hardly stand up, much less dance.
Sad but true.
But Dancing with the Stars loves a sad story. And one night this guy from Shark Tank was on there and he was going to do a dance dedicated to his late mother. She passed away about 6 years ago, and he got out there and did a waltz, and the judges were just all crying, and they were like, that was so amazing. And one of them said, you know, your mother is up there in heaven right now, and she's looking down, and she saw that dance, and she is so proud of you. And I thought, you know, I guess that's a nice thought, but I'm not sure I want my dead parents watching me. Because, frankly, there's a few things I don't want them seeing. In fact, there's been a couple of times when I just said, Dad, if you're watching, I'd appreciate it if you just turned your head.
I want to see it!
Feel free to come back next time I'm playing with Galactic Cowboys or something.
No thanks.
But honestly, I don't think my parents are watching me or walking around in heaven or thinking about anything right now. But I really miss them, and I always think about them, especially around Easter time. Because they were hardcore Christians, and they always celebrated the Easter, even though its origins are based in paganism.
Wow!
Yeah, the origins of Easter was all about the sex. But kind of like Christmas, the Christians said, we don't care where it came from, we're going to make it our own.
Yeah.
But it's not just the Christians. I think everyone celebrates Easter because it's fun. It's just a good excuse to buy some candy and eat a ham.
It just makes me feel so much better.
Because there's people I know that don't even believe in God, but that one day a year they'll either go to church or say, Happy Easter! It just seems kind of ridiculous, because to me, if you want to believe in Jesus, that's fine, but if you don't, I don't really care. On the other hand, do not confuse me with that man or woman who just wants to accept all faiths and religions equally and for us to all just get along. Because let's face it, there's a lot of jacked up religions, and at this point in my life, I don't really like any of them. But what I really hate are those coexist bumper stickers. And every time I see one, I just want to ram my car into them and smash their bumper in. And when they get out and say, what the hell, I just say, remember, don't judge. Oh, and one more thing.
Get off my lawn!
Okay, I know a lot of you out there have kids, but if you've got a teenage daughter, I'd just like you to tell me what the deal is. Because when they're young, they're really sweet, and you take them to the park, and they ride around the mall on your shoulders. But when they turn 13, it all changes. And even though they've got a TV and DVR and Netflix and cable in their rooms, they just look at you like you're stupid and somehow mistreating them.
You're just a bad parent.
All they want to do is shut the door so you can't bother them so they can talk to their boyfriends on their cell phones. And the other day my stepdaughter says to Lindsay, yeah, me and my boyfriend, we're going out. And Lindsay says, oh, hell no, you're not going anywhere. But apparently, going out is just a term they use for being a couple. I think when I was in junior high, we called it going steady. But no matter what you call it, it's nauseating. And if I ever catch this little D-bag that she is supposedly going out with near my house, he will get punched in the throat. And if I have to go to jail for that, well, it'll be worth it. But unless he finds a way to ride his skateboard across town, I don't think that's something I have to worry about. But just in case he does try to show up, he won't even make it inside the door.
Get off my lawn!
You see, it's not that I'm a mean guy. It's just that I have a responsibility to protect my home and everything that lies inside of it. Because you can call me old-fashioned, but a man's home is his castle. And therefore, every man should have his own man cave. I'm pretty sure that's in the Constitution.
You're a sexist.
But regardless, when Lindsay and I bought this house that we're living in now, there was this space downstairs, and I said, this would be perfect for a man cave. And I've been waiting to fix this thing up, and when we got our taxes back, I said, okay, now's the time. And I told her, we need a big high-def TV over in front of the couch. I'm going to put all my sports action figures over there on the shelf. And I may even paint a Chiefs or Royals logo over here on the wall. And Lindsay said, okay, sure. And I'm going to put some knickknacks over here and put some doilies out over by the TV.
No!
Well, you could imagine my disgust. I said, whoa, hold on right there. No knickknacks, no doilies. This is a man cave, and if you don't like it...
Get off my lawn!
Well, actually, we talked about it for a while, and I'm probably going to end up with some doilies. But come next football season, that will be my domain, and don't you forget it. Yeah, who says this isn't a family show?
Everyone!
Now here with the news, it's my wife, Lindsay. What do you got for us today, sexy thing?
Well, Monty, in political news, Hillary Clinton has announced via social media that she will once again be running for president.
Oh, God.
Clinton, who is 67, says becoming a grandmother has made her think deeply about her responsibility as a steward of the world.
Oh, yes. Well, that is so valiant of her to say. But I'll tell you, if this country elects her to replace Barack Obama... That's when I will officially know America is comprised of mostly idiots, the end is near, and I might as well go ahead and just kill myself.
Well, yes.
All right, what's next?
In national news, a man in South Carolina was shot and killed by a cop after scuffling with the police officer and attempting to flee the scene.
Okay, well, is that it?
Well, the victim, 50-year-old Walter Scott, had been previously arrested 10 times for things like assault and battery and failure to pay child support.
Well, that's bad and all, but this happens all the time. Why is this a big story?
Well, did I mention that Walter Scott was black?
Oh my God, I didn't realize he was black. In that case, this is not only horrible, this is a hate crime. And let me just say that again in case you misunderstood me. What you've got here is a hate crime.
Truly heinous.
Absolutely, Lindsay. All right, next story.
In sports news, during a post-game news conference, a microphone picked up comments by a Kentucky basketball player that were directed at a Wisconsin Badger saying, "Fuck that nigga."
Oh my God, well, I hope we were able to bleep out what you just said, because that kind of racist talk will not be tolerated on this show, nor should it ever be tolerated or uttered in our society. It is truly terrible that anyone would ever say the N-word, and this guy should be reprimanded to the fullest extent, and maybe never even be allowed to play again. I know that may seem harsh, but I think it's time we take a stand against racism in this country. All right, forgive me for the rant, but continue on with your story, Lindsay.
Kentucky guard Andrew Harrison, who is an African American, later apologized for his comments about Frank Kaminsky, who is white.
Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. So this was a black guy calling a white guy the N-word.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, that's fine then. What's the problem? I mean, if Kaminsky would have said the N-word in reference to Harrison, now that would be different. But as it is, who cares?
Exactly.
All right, next story.
In some heartwarming news, people in Colorado raised $12,000 to furnish a Rottweiler dog with prosthetic legs on all four paws.
Wow, how sweet.
Yes, the owner thanked everyone for their donations and for giving Brutus the gift of being a dog.
All right. Yeah, that's nice and all, but 12 grand?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it just amazes me. People will donate thousands of dollars to help a dog, but I can't even get them to buy a t-shirt.
What? You don't like dogs?
No, dogs are fine, but they're dogs. So how about we put that thing to sleep and give the 12 grand to a human or some kid with cancer?
Huh?
You know, now I'm just pissed off, so let's just move on.
Okay.
Next story.
Okay.
What do you got?
In local news, a house is on fire somewhere in the city right now.
All right, that's all you've got?
No, there's also a broken water main that's flooding a street.
You've really got nothing at all, do you?
All right, there's a stalled car on the freeway.
Okay, now you're just making stuff up.
Some Girl Scouts are selling cookies.
Yeah, yeah, we're done here. This has been the news with Lindsay.
Eating too much bacon is bad for you.
That was just Lindsay reporting on things in the news.
And that is going to do it, my friends, for another episode of the Rockcast. If you want to drop me a line and tell me what you thought, you can find me on Facebook or at my website, MontyColvin.net. I'm going to play you one last song from a band called Shadows Fall. And I read an interview the other day with one of these guys, and he said that they're pretty much through as a band. The singer has kids and doesn't want to go on the road that much anymore. And they finally realized that they were just going to always be kind of an opening band for everybody else. They did a lot of shows in the past with Killswitch Engage and bands like that, but it's really hard to make it anymore. And I really understood what the guy was saying because I've been through some of that myself. It's hard to justify going out on the road for months at a time and coming home with nothing. So like a lot of cool bands, Shadows Fall is probably done, and I'll miss them. But they left us some good music, like this song. It's called Redemption. And I've been telling people for years that the lead guitar player in Shadows Fall completely rips. And apparently the guys in Anthrax thought so too, because he is now playing in Anthrax. So check this song out, hope you enjoy it, and I will talk to you soon. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care, don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and
rock on.
destruction. Of all the thoughts I see, so you near, creating all your fear. I bet you nation for the super severe. The future is so clear. There's nothing left to see. Yourself you have betrayed. We must fight to seize the day. Oh, world, where are you? Our voices can't be bound. Oh, world, where are you? Redemption in the power of the self.
What's up with these kids and their music?